Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Yachin Community Studios, and sometime right about now, John Gambadoro is probably around the exits of the Flagstaff Airport, I'm guessing, on the I-17.
Oh, you mean Fort Tuthill?
Yes, the Fort Tuthill exit. Just about ready to get on the I-40 westbound, headed to his beautiful palatial cabin up there in northern Arizona, and probably listening to every single word we're saying through the Arizona Sports app. Gambo's off today, enjoying a four-day holiday weekend up in Flagstaff. We got our producer, Jordan Bird, filling in for Gambo today.
It's a pleasure. Typically, when I'm on the other side of the glass on the Burns and Gambo show,
yeah,
a lot of the times it's when you're off watching a movie or something, and it's Gambo and myself. So this is a nice change of pace.
It is. This is normally when you're filling in. Yeah, it's a mental day off that I need.
That's completely understandable.
The latest Marvel movie is out, and I want to go see it at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I just decide, you know what? I'm quote unquote sick.
Let's make
today.
It a day.
Kind of like what Vince Murata did on the Bickley and Murata show.
I know. It's odd to me how many people around Arizona sports seem to get sick on Fridays Mondays.
I tell you what, Vinny did it right. Okay, I've been listening to the Bickley and Murata show. Vinny did it right. You could tell in his voice, he was really faking the illness the last couple of days. So when he called in sick on Friday, it sounded like he was building towards being sick.
Yeah.
Very, very wise. I mean, it's
that's a seasoned pro that lays the groundwork a few days in advance.
That is a Ferris Bueller type move right there by Vince Murata. He gets the nod of approval from me as a guy who fakes a lot of sick days around here. I am impressed.
Hey, the first step in getting better is admitting that you have an issue. Is admitting that you have a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. The next time I'm gone, you'll know where I'm at. I'm at the movies watching Solo or something like that. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Going deep, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Today, the first day that a group of players came in to work out for the Phoenix Suns with the number one overall pick and the number 16 overall pick and a couple of second rounders too. So it's not like every single player who comes in is going to be there gunning for that number one spot. And to be honest with you, I don't know how many of those potential number one picks we'll see over the next couple of weeks. Those might be done more in private, not in the glare of the media, things like that. But today they had a group of, what, about a half dozen players in, right?
Six players, all guards, and all players that will either probably likely not be drafted or will be more so towards the back end of the first or second round guys, including ASU's own Trey Holder, who was out there.
Yeah, I'm looking for the list right now. It wasn't a list that's going to blow you away. In fact, here it is right here. Trevon Blewett, Devontae Graham, Trey Holder, Kendrick Nunn from Oakland. Yeah, I mean, not a big list, but what today did provide was the opportunity to talk to Ryan McDonough about what they're going to do at number one. Now, he's spoken about it at great length, but he spoke about it with even more length today. How many players are you considering out? How many players will you work out at the number one spot?
I'd say, well, you know, we'd like to work out more than that. I mean, we're keeping an open mind throughout the process. I think we'd be lying if we said there were 10 or more guys, but, I think there are 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 guys that we'd like to bring in. Now, obviously, some of those players and their agents will be up to them to make a call, whether they feel like, you know, they have a legit shot or not with us. But, you know, we wouldn't invite them if they didn't have a chance and we weren't seriously considering them.
Now, that's interesting. Some agents might go, you're inviting my guy, but we know you're not going to take my guy number one, so I'm not going to waste my client's time by having him go out there. I would think that'd be a silly thing to do, but it's possible, I suppose.
But, I mean, as much as everyone else around, I mean, the fan base here, what we've been talking about on these airways for the last week and a half, everyone seems to think it's Luka Doncic or DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. Even guys like Mo Bamba or Marvin Bagley really aren't in consideration. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the closer we get to this, we're still a month out from the actual draft, that these guys start turning down workout requests from the Phoenix Suns.
Well, I mean, it's just depending on Mo Bamba is a perfect example. Is he really going to be the number one pick?
Well, is Marvin Bagley really going to be the number one pick?
No, probably not. I mean, is it good to go work out just in case? Maybe. I mean, that's if you're an agent, that's one of those tough calls. I don't know how you would lean. Trading the pick That's been a big topic of conversation the last few days, especially with the Karl Anthony Towns stuff out there. Ryan McDonough went down his criteria for trading that selection.
I think there's a very small grouping of players that we would consider it for and trading it for. And, I laid out some of the criteria. It would have to be a young, proven star player with multiple years on his contract or multiple years of team control. And so, once you start whittling down the list, that list probably shrinks to a handful of players, if not, fewer players than that.
Well, for being technical, that is Karl Anthony Towns, assuming he's signed to a contract extension this
summer. He meets that criteria.
He does. So, young star, controllable. You have him under contract for a number of years. Yeah, I mean.
Well, you don't have him under contract yet.
It would be assumed that you would. It would be assumed that you would.
And it's going to come at a steep price, the way that you laid it out yesterday, even a higher price than we thought initially for what a new contract for Karl Anthony Towns could look like.
Because he was all NBA third team, the maximum amount of money he can earn just went up by about $30 million this offseason. But as McDonough said, the overwhelming likelihood is they keep number one.
I think, the overwhelming likelihood is that we keep the pick. However, we're open if those teams call us or we call them. But as of now, obviously we're planning on keeping it. We want to go through the process. I think if we were to arrive at that destination, that would be, on draft night or just before the draft. So I think it's very likely we keep the pick in draft number one.
What's interesting about the comment about the criteria for trading number one, does Kawhi Leonard fit that criteria? Because he doesn't have as much of a stable future contractually as Karl Anthony Towns, or at least the option.
Yeah, you could not responsibly deal that pick unless you knew the guy you were trading it for was. You can't trade it for Kawhi Leonard unless you know Kawhi Leonard's going to sign a contract.
Now, there could
extension.
Be a wink-wink handshake deal before the trade gets down that once this trade happens, or you sign and trade,
there would have to be.
Yes.
You'd have to have a wink-wink nudge-nudge deal with Kawhi Leonard. Hey, you're coming here, and we're going to give you a five-year deal worth X million dollars.
So, but even with all that being said, I still don't know if Kawhi kind of meets that criteria, because there still is so many what ifs. I mean, even McDonough kind of said that, that's only a handful of players that really meet this criteria. The one who really only meets it is Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, and even then, he still has to sign his contract this offseason. I know there's a lot of stuff that is said this time of year, a lot of information, a lot of misinformation, things like that. I actually tend to take Ryan kind of at face value on this one. I really don't think they're going to trade this pick. I really don't. Because I still think that the likelihood of the availability of the players that we're talking about is so slim that, it's the overwhelming likelihood is that they'll keep it. Now, if they keep it, DeAndre Ayton is the first name that comes up. There's been some talk lately that DeAndre Ayton thinks he's a four. Ryan McDonough says, in this league, he's a five.
I think a lot of it was schematically they had him playing the four a lot with Ristich, so he was guarding away from the basket on the perimeter. In the NBA, he's a center. He's a five. He slides well. He moves his feet well. He's a tremendous athlete at that size in terms of, strength, fluidity, coordination, all
What's
that.
Funny is I've heard from a few U of A fans on Twitter who have asked the question openly, does DeAndre Ayton view himself as a five? Does he want to be a five at the NBA?
Well,
level?
Supposedly that's one of the things that enticed him to come to U of A, was the idea that you can maybe play four, that you're not going to be this five guy that's just going to guard the basket and hang out, that maybe you'll be able to do a little bit more things that a power forward would be able to do. But Ayton, if he doesn't realize, then I feel like he's being naive. I mean, what do you really think you're going to come into the NBA at 7-1 and be a stretch four?
Well, not only is he naive, he's costing himself money.
Yes.
I read a terrific analysis of DeAndre Ayton today and basically said, look, if he embraces being an NBA center, he's going to make a lot of money and he's going to be really, 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 really good as long as he embraces it, wants to do it, loves doing it. If he doesn't, if he thinks in the back of his mind that he's a four, not a five, he could experience some real problems in the NBA.
I'm not saying this is the way that he is thinking it, but is it outlandish to think for a 19-year-old kid that I don't want to be a five in the NBA? If you're 19 years old, the day that the day and age of the NBA where the center was the dominant guy is a foregone thing that happened way before you were even born. I mean, the last guy was probably Shaquille O'Neal. You might have a small memory of that. but the 90s and 80s of dominant centers.
So you're saying that because the way the NBA game is played, kids growing up, that a DeAndre Ayton type might look at the center position and go, man, who plays center anymore? None of the best players in this league are centers anymore.
I'm saying it's a possibility. Yeah. I'm saying I don't think it would be outlandish for a 19-year-old kid to have that thought go through his head of look at all of these other stars in the NBA. Not many of them are centers, the position that everyone wants me to play in the NBA.
As far as the defensive issues for DeAndre Ayton, doesn't block a lot of shots. He's not great defensively. Ryan McDonough is not concerned.
I think, what we've seen, what I've seen on film and in person so far is a lot of it is, you know, just experience. I think knowing defensive rotations, when to switch, when to rotate, that just comes with time and with playing. I think he has a high-level feel for the game, especially on the offensive end of the court. And from my experience, guys who have that, in the offensive end of the floor, usually are in time able to translate that to the defensive end of the floor as well.
I understand he's just 19, but a lot of this has been tied to the want to of DeAndre Ayton. Does he want to be great defensively? Or is that not a big priority for him? Are his challenges defensively because he doesn't know how to do it or because he doesn't really want to do it?
I know you said your disclaimer was his age, but that's the reason I feel like there's a lot of these questions is because we're dealing with teenagers still. And so when they lose, if they have a lack of focus or if the effort's not there, to me, it's kind of laughable because, I mean, we're all projecting.
Because that's typical 19-year-old behavior?
Yeah, or put yourself in your own position.
You think about yourself when you were 19 years old. Did you want to do everything? I mean, right.
And now, granted, most people did not have multimillion-dollar contracts that were in their future. But nonetheless, on a maturity mental level, you're still dealing with a teenager. And so even guys like Marquese Chris, they're young players. They should still be in college. They should still be developing. The stuff about effort and intensity and all that, I'm not worried about because that will come in time.
Okay. The Positive Impact Awards presented by Zip Sports Grill and Goldie's Sports Cafe is coming to the Talking Stick Resort Arena on Monday, June 11th. It's a special luncheon featuring ASU head football coach Herm Edwards and former U of A football coach Dick Tomey. It honors 10 high school student-athletes who will be awarded with college scholarships. Visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets to this sold-out event. The quarterback whisperer talked about his old team's rookie quarterback again. What did he say, and how does it apply? We'll talk about that coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show with Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo.
Dave Burns. John Gambadoro.
So you got something you need to tell us, Gambo?
Burns and Gambo. Afternoons on your drive home. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Jordan Bird in for Gambo on this Friday here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, going into the Memorial Day weekend. Gambo taking the long weekend. He'll be back on Tuesday. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today, including Bruce Arians this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show. And I want to make this clear, and I'll be curious if you agree with this. No matter what you and I say, Jordan, over the next 10 and a half minutes about Bruce Arians, Josh Rosen, and the Arizona Cardinals, at the end of the day, I still think it would have been better if Bruce Arians had a chance to coach Josh Rosen. Agree or disagree?
It's tough for me to...
Just given his experience with quarterbacks.
On face value, on paper, yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. But I think there are some underlining issues there that might have made it more difficult than we... When it would have believed.
I agree. And so for me, you know, I'm usually not a black or a white guy. I'm kind of a shades of gray guy. All right. And on this one, I'm kind of shades of gray. But I think at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, if you said you've got the option, Bruce Arians can mentor Josh Rosen for a year or not mentor Josh Rosen for a year, I still think I would have chosen for Bruce Arians to impart his quarterback wisdom on Josh Rosen.
That's okay? Fair. Yeah, and I agree with that.
Just on, and not that that means I wish, you know, that BA was the coach this year and not Steve Wilks. I'm just saying the experience that BA has amassed in coaching quarterbacks over the years.
And the names that he has coached over the years.
Oh, sure. Roethlisberger and Peyton and Luck and Palmer and on and on and on and on. I do think there's value in that. That being said, in listening to BA this morning on with Doug and Wolf, the thing that struck me was kind of the same thing that struck you. I wonder how those two would have fit together. I do wonder how
Rosen.
Those are two alphas.
Yeah, oh, big time.
And generally, that is a combination. That is a that's a math equation that doesn't work out.
I mean, most quarterbacks are alphas, but usually rookie quarterbacks coming into the league aren't as alpha as Josh Rosen has been since he's been here. I mean, he's smart guy, very intelligent, very much a go-getter. You know, he questions everything, wants to know why everything we've heard about him. I do wonder how that would mesh with B.A. and who he is in terms of his personality.
Well, and not only where Rosen would be at in his career, but where B.A. is at in his career. How many times did we hear about the reasons in Arizona he was so kind of fast and loose was because he knew that this was it? That if I get fired or, you know, if whatever the case may be, so be it. This is my last stop. This is my last job. I'm going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily a mentality that would coincide with a brash young rookie who is a loudmouth at times or could be perceived that way.
By some, yeah. Here's Bruce Arians this morning. First of all, very complimentary of Josh Rosen, most NFL-ready quarterback in the draft, adding his voice to many who have said that.
Oh, I think he's probably the most ready guy in the draft, you know. He played in a really good offense. He's a bright guy, you know. I would say, hey, just let your football do the talking and just blend in.
Okay, see, that's the part right there, that last 3 seconds. Let your football do the talking and blend in. And first of all, that is the most anti-Bruce Arians. I mean, when has Bruce Arians ever blended in?
This is the same guy who every Rams game had some sort of comment that would poke the bear on the locker room.
No doubt. Now, Bruce Arians has earned that right, and you can make an argument that Josh Rosen hasn't, and I would buy that. Bruce Arians has earned the right to be brash and not to blend in and to not let the football do the talking. But if that's truly how he believes Josh Rosen should behave himself, I do wonder, again, circling back to my original point, how would B.A. and Rosen have meshed if B.A. internally would have been saying, man, just keep your mouth shut and learn how it's done before you start talking, or actually do it before you start talking. I wonder how that would have worked with those two.
But the one thing, though, that B.A. says there is, you know, let your football do the talking. So as much as B.A. was known as the soundbite and for saying whatever was on his mind, without winning the ultimate goal, his football did back that up a lot. I mean, he did have successful
teams. Oh, sure,
he
won. Yeah,
so he was able to, it allowed him to say that kind of stuff because his teams, like the example of the Rams, he was able to talk trash about the Rams because they were beating them on the field. Now, I wonder if B.A. has an issue with it just being that this guy hasn't done anything yet, or not an issue. That makes it sound like he has an actual problem.
He has an axe to grind with. But and I don't think that's the case.
That last comment, is that just because Rosen has yet to play an NFL game? Or if after his rookie season and he plays and he is successful, does Bruce Arians not have an issue anymore because he was able to back up his football?
B.A. was also asked what Rosen's biggest challenge is.
I think like all young quarterbacks, it's winning over your locker room.
Mm.
You know, I did a show the other day about Carson Wentz and did he need to change the way he plays the game. And he probably can now because he's won over his locker room. They know he's tough.
Mm-hmm.
They know he's all in. And that for a young quarterback, a lot of times, that's the hardest thing. Just letting them know that I'm all in.
And as far as Rosen getting a chance to beat out Sam Bradford, which is something that Steve Wilks has said he will get the chance to do.
Well, yeah, that's the opportunity. He's gotten the opportunity that a lot of rookies don't get. You know, we used to practice on both fields so that we could see everybody. But I mean, with him getting first team reps, with Sam sitting out, that's his opportunity to show that he can beat him out.
I mean, that's the thing. The two-field system that B.A. used to use, you know, rookies over here, main guys over here, and you earn the opportunity to go from field two to field one. I remember the last couple of years of B.A.'s tenure. That was a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time of year, if you got the if you got the invite, the call-up, so to speak, from field two to field one, it was a big, well, there is no more field two, field one. It's just the field where guys practice. And again, how, if B.A. is the coach, is Rosen being given as much of an opportunity to beat out Sam Bradford right now, today, May 25th, under B.A. as he is under Steve Wilks? I tend to think, no, he's not.
I agree with you. Now, the one thing, though, that does kind of play a caveat in this is Sam Bradford. if all of the situation is completely the same except for it's Bruce Arians and not Steve Wilks, well, you still have a Sam Bradford who isn't 100% healthy right now or confident enough to allow him to go out there and do everything that everyone else is. So I think you would still need Rosen to come over, but based off of Bruce Arians' history, not only with the two fields, but with the rookies, what does he always say? By Thanksgiving
rookies are ready to play, yeah.
So I don't know if Rosen would be getting the same. He certainly wouldn't be getting the same amount of opportunities. There might still be a sliver there, but not the way that this is rolled out.
I tend to believe, and this might be just a stunning overgeneralization, and it's probably at some level inaccurate, but I tend to believe that if Bruce were still the coach, that the far more traditional model, Sam Bradford is the starter, Mike Glennon is the backup, and we've got this rookie that we're going to draft and develop, that traditional model would be followed by the Cardinals this season. Now, I think with Wilks and in particular Mike McCoy, the model is a little different where, yeah, Sam Bradford's the starter, but boy, if Josh Rosen beats him out, Josh Rosen beats him out. And certainly, if Josh Rosen is the second best quarterback on this roster, they're not going to wait for him to get his feet wet to put him out there if Sam Bradford gets hurt. They're going to put him out there and have him ready to play as long as he's the best one on the roster.
The other angle of this is with maybe this rookie class, maybe Josh Rosen specifically, is that special? Because there was a comment the other day from DJ Humphries where he mentioned how if you compare Josh Rosen and the way that he acts and his maturity level right now to when I was a rookie in 2015, he's like, it's night and day.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't even compare it. And so maybe this would be similar if Bruce Arians was here because Rosen is that special. We'll never know.
We'll never know. And we're dealing in a completely hypothetical conversation. But that's kind of what we do. We have no idea. But I do think that given the, in some ways, the similarities of their personalities, BA to Rosen, I'm fascinated by the idea of how those two personalities would have meshed together, or would they have meshed?
And it's not just that BA would have been the quarterback coach or been in his ear from the offensive side of it. That's the head coach. So by comparison, when you have a defensive-minded guy like Steve Wilks, who I'm sure is still heavily involved in what is going on with Rosen, but for the most part is letting Byron Leftwich and Mike McCoy handle it, that would be, without a doubt, that would be different if BA was here.
Yeah. Could a surprise release in baseball change the course of the D-back season? Could it change the course of the National League West? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Jordan Bird filling in.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
And for that, we'll turn it over to the producer of today's Burns and Gambo show, Andy Greenberg, who is a self-admitted Seattle sports fan.
Yeah.
Okay, which,
I mean, I grew up there.
And that's fine. That's fine. That's cool. it makes your place in this world a little unusual, but yeah. I will tell you, that is a sweet Mariners lid you are rocking in there.
The modern retro.
The modern with the upside down trident in the shape of the M. Yeah, I hate the Seattle Seahawks, but I don't mind the Mariners. I might actually have to get me one of those lids. That's a very nice lid right there. Very like it. Very much like it. What's today's poll question?
Well, the Suns are trying to do something that the Mariners haven't been able to do for a long time, and that's make the playoffs. So if the Suns draft DeAndre Ayton, what year will they break the streak and make the playoffs? 35% say 2019, next season. 49% say 2020. 9% 2021. 7% 2022 or beyond.
I think 2020 has to be the realistic goal.
Not next year, but the year after, right?
I mean, do you honestly think you're going to improve to make the playoffs next year, you would have to improve by 20-some games to qualify for the Western Conference playoffs.
I'm trying to, what was the worst team that made, or what was the record of, let me see, the playoff team in the West that had 47 wins, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. 47 wins. The Minnesota Timberwolves had 47 wins.
And by comparison, the Suns had 21.
So you'd have to have a 26-game improvement, which...
That's unlikely.
It's unlikely. That's a big, tall order, especially when a lot of the money that you have to spend on free agents doesn't kick in until, not this offseason, but next offseason when Tyson's contract comes off the book and when Jared Dudley's contract comes off the book, I'll say 2020. That's probably what I would vote for, too.
Even that, I mean, maybe it's the recent run of the Suns that has beaten me down as a fan, but even then, I might have to say 2021.
That might be a little too ambitious. There's a really good story on ArizonaSports.com right now. Luke Lipinski wrote it, in which he takes a look at in history, the nine teams that have won the lottery and picked first who made the playoffs the next year. And most of them, by far the vast majority of them, were very unique, special circumstances as to why they had the number one pick, that they weren't that far off. The true team that comes the closest to the Suns situation, if you look at it, was the San Antonio Spurs pre-David Robinson. Like, they were no good. They got David Robinson. They went to the playoffs the next year. Yeah. And if you believe that DeAndre Ayton, as Dave Pasch said yesterday, is David Robinson with a jump shot, then maybe that's the best comp for the Phoenix Suns. But it still seems ambitious to think that could happen.
Well, a lot of this doesn't even apply to the Phoenix Suns. A lot of it also was what's going on in the Western
of
Conference.
Course. Oh, yeah,
so,
of course.
I mean, the Suns could have this dramatic turnaround, win 20 more games than they did this year. That would put them right at 500. But yet, due to the strength of the rest of the Western Conference, it might be out of your control.
Yeah. Turning to Major League Baseball, the Arizona Diamondbacks taking on the A's today. And the only reason this thought popped into my head was because, A, the Diamondbacks are struggling so badly offensively right now, and B, there is a Boston connection, obviously, with the Diamondbacks front office. Hanley Ramirez shockingly got released today by the Boston Red Sox, and it was a shock. My son is a Red Sox fan. He woke up this morning, came downstairs. Did you see that the Red Sox? I'm like, yeah, I saw that the Red Sox cut Hanley Ramirez. So now they have 7 days to either trade him, and no one's going to trade for that contract or just outright release him. They're going to end up releasing him when it's all said and done. Hanley Ramirez is basically a designated hitter or a first baseman, which doesn't serve the Diamondbacks very well at all. He hasn't played the outfield since I think it was 2015, and he wasn't very good at it at all with Boston. And yet, the Boston connection and the way the Diamondbacks are struggling right now, would you bring him in just if for nothing else to give you a bat off the bench and somebody who can occasionally play at first, somebody who can occasionally play in the outfield just to try to spark some life back into this offense? Would you consider it?
Yeah, of course I would consider it. I mean, I don't know if after that consideration I would actually pull the trigger, but the one thing that is funny about this is a lot of the analysts and the people who have been reporting on this today have talked about how poorly Hanley Ramirez has been hitting in Boston. And it's like, well, if you look at his average this season, he's been batting well above anything on the Diamondbacks right now. He's at 254. I mean, for the Diamondbacks, what, only Peralta, I think, is above that?
Off the top of my head, I think the only one right now, you might have the stats in front of you, I think Peralta is the only regular. Well, certainly among the regulars, he's the only one ahead of that. I think on the whole roster, he might be the only one ahead of that right now. I mean, it's been miserable for Hanley Ramirez. I mean,
David Peralta, 265. Then you have Jake Lamb, 250, Descalso, and then down the line, yeah.
In May, Hanley Ramirez is hitting .163.
Well, he already sounds like a Diamondback.
with a .200 on-base percentage, a .300 slugging percentage, he has been terrible. Now, his contractual situation is a big reason why he got let go. If he certain number of plate appearances this year, his $22 million contract vests next year. They didn't want to come anywhere near that, so they just decided to cut him because they had Pedroia coming off the DL today. Look, if not for the Diamondbacks, at least consider a story that you pointed out. Was it CBS Sports?
Yes, I believe so.
Five possible landing spots for Hanley Ramirez. They didn't list the Diamondbacks, but they did list a team in the NL West.
Yeah, the Colorado Rockies, who actually do have issues at first base right now and actually could use a first baseman considering the offensive production or the lack thereof that they've been getting out there. So one way or another, there is a chance that Hanley Ramirez could have an impact or could have a hand in the way that the NL West race plays out this season.
He'll end up somewhere.
Oh, of course.
But
if Matt Harvey and all of his baggage and the way that he was performing ended up somewhere, then yeah, Hanley Ramirez is going somewhere.
Diamondbacks and the A's tonight. Bob Brenly, former D-backs manager, current TV analyst, was on with Bickley and Murata today, and he told some stories about how he used to deal with slumps when he was both a manager and a player.
I recall one specific time we were scuffling really badly. I believe it was 0-2. And I called a team meeting and, came in with a dead serious look on my face and stood up in front of the team and said, we've got a real issue, guys, and we need to sit here and figure this out before this ball game starts. We need to decide where we want our World Series parade to go. Should it go down Van Buren? Should we go up Central? I need you guys to think about this because, you know, the World Series is right around the corner, and we're going to have to plan this parade route. And I turned and walked out of the room, you know, and at that point, I don't think anybody on the ball club was thinking about postseason play, but you know, just the fact that you take your focus off of your own problems and have a little fun with it. Look at the big picture. Geez, we got a long way to go this season.
I'm pretty sure that 0-2 team, that those struggles would have been towards the end of the season. Because that was one of the best teams of baseball season long, and they were derailed by injuries.
They won 98 games.
Yeah, I remember that year like it was yesterday. But I remember by September, everybody knew they were dead man walking going in October. Because Gonza was out, Womack was out. That team was one banged up unit going into the postseason, and they ended up, I think, did they even win?
I'm looking at it here. They had a couple towards the end of August into September. They had a 6-game losing streak. Then, like the last week of the season, they had a 6-game losing streak before they won their last four of the regular.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Listen to this suggestion from Bob Brumley back when he was a player with the Giants.
I played for a team in San Francisco one time. Danny Ozark was our interim manager, and he had the starting lineup filled out on the lineup card, and he put the 8 position players. He put one bat from each guy in a bat bag and then had us just draw the bats out blindly. And that was the bat you had to use that night, whether it was yours or not. Try something different. You know, this feels a little different. You know, just kind of maybe take your focus off the negativity that you've been experiencing lately and have some fun with it.
That was BB's response to, you know, what we were talking about yesterday, the Jenny 8675309, drawing names out of a hat for the lineup or set the lineup to Tommy Two Tones 8675309. That was, he said, look, I had a coach once, a manager who, you had, so like, can you imagine Paul Goldschmidt using Gerard Dyson's bat?
No, I can't.
Or vice versa. No. I mean, that's almost crazier than picking a lineup out of a hat, I think.
But just like Gambo, and you pointed out yesterday in terms of all the jokes that we had about choosing the lineup that way, all of these suggestions of these funny slump busters, the Diamondbacks aren't going to do any of these because they're so analytically driven. I mean, could you honestly see the analytics of the Arizona Diamondbacks saying, yeah, go ahead and maybe you have, what, a 34-ounce bat. Now go to a 30-ounce bat or so. I mean, that could drastically mess up the mechanics of your swing.
No doubt. Although it is funny that you brought up the analytics because I thought Bick had a really, really good point during his show today. And it was, I believe it was the subject of his Bickley Blast about how maybe the Diamondbacks have crossed over the threshold into being too analytical. And there's just too much information, too much data that they're giving to their hitters, and they are just way up in their own head right now. In that they can't, rather than simplifying matters, all of the information they're being given as hitters is confusing the issue.
Possibly.
Because it's taking the simplification out of it.
Right now, everyone is scrambling for answers.
Yes.
So could that be the case? Absolutely. Could it be something completely, entirely different? That might be the case as well.
The Warriors are on the brink of elimination. A key injury could right the ship, but a radical theory might sink them. That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show with Jordan Bird filling in. Oh, man.
This brings me back.
Boy. Tonight, Game 6 of the NBA Finals between the Chicago Bulls and your Phoenix Suns.
That's not bad for
not
the
bad,
NBC
right?
voiceover guy.
That's not bad. Man, I burned on my brain. God, this music does bring back some memories. It really does. The Houston Rockets in an enviable position. Not in an enviable position. I'm not exactly sure how to assess the position of the Houston Rockets right now. Up 3-2 over the defending world champ Golden State Warriors was still a game to be played at Houston, and yet the news today about Chris Paul ruled out for Game 6. He will not play tomorrow night in Golden State. I don't know what his availability is going to be like Monday if there's a Game 7.
There's some doubt. Yeah.
There's some doubt. Now, Mike D'Antoni has said, yeah, we'll be fine.
If he's there, great. Good for him. If he isn't, we have enough guys, and it's time for somebody else to step up. We got plenty of guys over there that will have some fresh legs, that's for sure. So we'll be all right. But we just got to continue what we're doing, and then we'll find that way.
He is such a BSer. Okay, We're going to be fine without the guy who just won us game five, who carried our team.
He did.
We have other guys on our bench. Oh, you've only played seven players the last two games.
I'm not playing the guys on the bench, but man, they're there when I want them. They'll be great.
He's going to be like Norman Dale and be like, the four on the floor, that's my team. That's my, and the ref comes over. You need one more. That's my team.
My team's on the floor. Yeah. My team's on the floor. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, and Mike, it's really, really easy to feel really, really bad for Mike in this situation. We can mock
him. Oh, I feel terrible for the Rockets.
When I saw that last night, I'm telling you, it was like watching Amari and Boris come off the bench all over again. And that same, if I were a Rockets fan, that same dread, that feeling of dread that I went to bed with that night when I saw Charles Barkley on that postgame show on TNT say, that's it. You know Amari and Boris aren't playing tomorrow. They're not. They're going to get suspended. I'm telling you, they're going to get suspended. That feeling of dread I went to bed with that night 10 years ago, if I were a Rockets fan, I would have that same feeling of dread. Watching Chris Paul tweak his hamstring with, a minute to go in that game last night? I mean, it was essentially over for the most part. Not exactly in the deep freeze, but close enough. I feel terrible for him. It's like 10 years ago all over again for Mike D'Antoni.
It is. But the one thing that, as much as I don't want to say it, I want to give Rockets and their fans everything, all my condolences, but are we really surprised that Chris Paul went down? I mean, this guy, his injury history, especially in the playoffs, mm-hmm. is, it seems like any time there's a big series or a big moment where him and his team are on the verge of breaking through, the guy's body does not hold up. And it really is a shame because before this injury, you're thinking the Rockets are going to be up. All they have to do is win one more with a game seven in Houston. So even if they lose game six, so be it. It just completely shifted the entire series. So much so that your normal partner has a pretty outlandish idea.
So I called Gambo today, knowing that he was out. And Gambo's up in Flagstaff, hanging out at the cabin, feeding the goats and cleaning out the goat pen. And that's how he's spending his Memorial Day weekend. I called him to warn him about that giant traffic jam throughout Phoenix today, the semi.
Oh, the one on I-10.
The one I got stuck in for an hour and a half today. I called him and said, hey, if you haven't left yet, you don't go this way, go a different way. He called me and we started talking about the show. What are you going to talk about today? Blah, blah, blah. He goes, I'll tell you what, if I were in there today, this is what I would talk about. If I were Mike D'Antoni, I wouldn't play James Harden in game six. I wouldn't play him. I'd rest him. I'd concede game six. And I'd have him fully locked and loaded and ready to go for game seven. That's what I would do. And man, we had a very civil conversation about it on the phone. I'm like, okay, but let's think about this. You've got two games left to eliminate the Warriors, and you are going to, of free will, give one of those chances away.
You have them on the ropes, in theory, even though that may not be the reality, but you have them on the ropes, and yet you're going to turn it into an elimination series on your own.
Sure. You're going to concede.
That's crazy.
It's like a Ryder Cup match, right? Well, yeah. I concede the hole. You got it. You're going to win the hole.
Now,
you might have a 40-foot putt. Try it.
Oh, this is no. This is more than a 40-foot putt.
Yeah. You're going to try to beat the Warriors.
You're trying to putt from the fairway.
You're going to try to beat the Warriors without Chris Paul in Golden State. With James Harden, who, by the way, has missed his last 20 three-point attempts in this series. And he doesn't even care.
James, obviously, you're not shooting the three ball the way you usually do. Is there anything?
I'm not.
Slightly. I'm being kind. Anything you feel?
Who cares? Nah.
Nothing mechanical or anything?
Nothing. I'm just missing shots. But we're winning, and I'm trying to compete on the defensive end and do other things to, help my team win. But if we got a guy like Eric Gordon making shots, and being aggressive, who cares?
And you listen to Harden and you listen to D'Antoni, there's nothing to worry about for the Rockets.
Yeah, we got this. We're fine. I'll hit a 3-1. And look, the law of averages say eventually James Harden is going to get hot.
Of course.
But outside of his 5-for-9 performance in game one, I think he's like 8-for-44 since in the four games since. So would you give any credence at all to sitting Harden in game six per Gambo?
It's an interesting idea just because what is the prospect? What is the percentage that Houston goes into Golden State without Chris Paul and beats them in game six?
With James Harden playing? Less than 5%.
I completely agree.
Less than 5%.
The odds are against you. But I think it's ridiculous to turn this series into an elimination for you by your own doing.
Yeah, I just don't know.
You may not win the game, but what happens if you do?
All right. I want to play this little thought exercise real quick before we go to break. All right.
Yeah.
The matchup we all figured was going to happen at the start of the season, the Cavaliers versus the Warriors, is in jeopardy. Both are down 3-2. At this stage in the game, right now, where we are today, what is the most likely matchup in the NBA Finals?
To me, it's Boston and Golden State.
Andy?
I still have Cavs-Warriors.
So do I. I still think it's Cavs-Warriors.
Even after what you saw, the way LeBron was dogging game.
Oh, okay. He's not going to dog tonight's game. He's going to – I'm setting the over-under right now, and LeBron James points at 40. 40.5. I'm setting 40. The over.
40.5.
40.5.
I'm That's all well and good. He could still get the over, and this team still could lose.
Boston's garbage on the road. They're not going to play well tonight. There's I'm almost positive there's going to be a Game 7. And when there is a Game 7 – do I trust those Boston youngsters in that moment at home to come through, or do I trust a seasoned vet who's been to the NBA Finals 7 straight years?
No, I don't.
I still think that's the most likely outcome.
I don't see. I mean, I can see your points. I just feel like in the Eastern Conference, Boston isn't as grand as young as they are and as inexperienced as they are. I still feel like there is enough talent that with a Game 7, they'll be able to pull that out. I feel like LeBron is running on fumes. And especially if it takes a Herculean effort in Game 6 to extend this series, what is going to be left there in Game 7?
What is the least likely finals matchup at this point? Andy, you look like you're ready to go.
I've got Cavs-Rockets. I say because of the Chris Paul injury, and the Celtics have two chances to beat the Cavaliers once.
Boy, Andy, you and I are on the same page. I have the Cavs Rockets too.
That's interesting, though, that you guys have the Cavs in both of them.
Yeah.
In the least and most likely.
It's because I'm split on the Boston Cavs thing. I'm not split about the Warriors. I think the Warriors are going to eliminate the Houston Rockets these next two games. Especially with the Chris Paul injury, I think the Rockets are toast.
And that's what is so disappointing about this Chris Paul injury, just to take it back to there real quick. Because for the people out there like myself who are tired of Golden State and want something new in the NBA Finals, up 3-2 with a healthy Chris Paul and a James Harden who was bound to break out of a shooting slump would have provided hope that maybe the Rockets could knock him off. Now, we're back to the same old, same old.
No doubt. Steven Adams, Joel Embiid, somewhere in between. Is that good enough for the number one pick overall in the NBA draft? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.